The future is on the line. Democracy hangs in the balance. The stakes couldn't be higher.
You're listening to The Stakes, KPFA's weekly deep dive into the races, issues, and power struggles shaping America's democracy. As the 2026 midterm elections unfold, we go beyond campaign headlines to examine the policies, court battles, voting rights disputes, and grassroots movements driving the national conversation. Stay tuned for The Stakes. You're listening to The Stakes. I'm Teresa Wierzbianska. On today's show, we go back to Maine, where just a week after Democratic Senate candidate Graham Plattner suddenly departed the race amid sexual assault allegations, voters are now calling for Republican Senator Susan Collins to exit stage left after a second person was killed by ICE over the past week, this time in the small community of Biddeford, Maine. We'll talk with longtime activist and former Maine DSA co-chair Todd Cretian about what Mainers on the ground are saying as they continue protesting outside Collins' office and the ICE detention center in that state. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina also suddenly departed the Senate race. Graham was declared dead after a brief illness over the weekend. Will this sudden shakeup throw energy to his Democratic opponent, Dr. Annie Andrews? Also, Trump is pulling out all the stops now to invalidate opponents and continue to complain about the results of the 2020 elections. This time, he's charging Georgia senators with fraud after the two won their respective Senate seats that year. We will hear from the nation's John Nichols about Trump's so-called election integrity plan he plans to unveil Thursday night. But first, in Wisconsin, Wisconsin Elections Commission has concluded there's probable cause to believe billionaire Elon Musk violated state election law by handing out $1 million checks to voters during last year's Wisconsin Supreme Court race. The commission has referred the case to the Brown County District Attorney, who now has 40 days to decide whether to pursue criminal charges. The six-member commission, made up of three Democrats and three Republicans, voted 5-1 to refer complaints alleging Musk's cash giveaways amounted to illegal election bribery. Commissioners found probable cause that a social media post offering $1 million payments to people who voted was intended to induce participation in the election. President Trump's nominee to lead the nation's intelligence agencies faced tough questions on Capitol Hill Wednesday after refusing to say Joe Biden won the 2020 election. During his Senate confirmation hearing, Jay Clayton repeatedly sidestepped questions about the last presidential election, fueling Democratic concerns that the intelligence community could become increasingly politicized under the Trump administration. Eileen Alfandari has more.
Jay Clayton is the current U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. He authorized last weekend's controversial subpoenas for four New York Times journalists who reported on security concerns over the luxury jet the Qatari government gave to President Trump. Several Democrats on the Senate Intelligence Committee questioned Clayton about whether the White House or other Trump administration officials pressured him to issue the subpoenas. Colorado's Michael Bennett tried to pin Clayton down.
So I'll ask you again, Mr. Clayton, did you or anybody at the Southern District of New York have conversations with anybody at the White House or the Justice Department in Washington, D.C., before you issued those subpoenas that resulted in New York Times reporters being served process at their homes?
Yeah, I can say it this way without getting into the investigation. The protocols require consultation with the Department of Justice.
Clayton dodged the question of whether anyone from the White House had directed him to issue the subpoenas. The Committee to Protect Journalists has called the subpoenas a, quote, extraordinary escalation in President Trump's efforts to threaten and intimidate independent news organizations and to have a chilling effect on the work of journalists across the country. Democrats also raised fears that Clayton might succumb to White House pressure to interfere in U.S. elections. Independent Maine Senator Angus King questioned Clayton about his remarks last month on election integrity.
During the interview on CNBC, you said the U.S. is doing an absolutely terrible job on election integrity and the American people are right to question it. What's the basis of that statement? Is there a problem of voter fraud in this country?
I don't think we can say definitively whether there is or is not until we have better processes.
We've had hundreds of analyses. We've had the Heritage Foundation study that found 1,650 cases out of 2 billion votes counted.
I would love for the American people to have incredible confidence in the integrity of our elections.
I would, too, and I would appreciate this administration would cease undermining that confidence.
During the same CNBC interview, Clayton said that California's voting procedures presented an opportunity for fraud. The former director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, said in a letter to Congress last February that Trump personally asked her to be on the premises when FBI agents executed a search warrant on the elections office in Fulton County, Georgia. Gabbard also said she facilitated what she described as a brief phone call between Trump and FBI agents who ended up seizing hundreds of boxes containing ballots. Georgia Democrat John Ossoff asked Clayton whether he would obey such a presidential order.
If the White House chief of staff or the president asks you to travel somewhere across the United States and oversee the execution of a domestic search warrant on a sensitive election facility, will you do it? Is that appropriate for the Director of National Intelligence?
That's a hypothetical.
Several Democrats tried to get Clayton to admit that Joe Biden won the 2020 presidential election, a fact that Trump still denies. Clayton would only say that Biden was certified the winner. John Ossoff had the most confrontational such exchange.
You refuse to answer a basic question about who won a presidential election?
But
you asked to lead America's intelligence community? Isn't it humiliating to be unable to answer this question, to have to indulge the president's delusions? We know, you know, everybody in this room knows the truthful answer to that question. Why can you not give it?
I think I gave you the answer.
Clayton did deny that he has spoken with Trump about Thursday's planned primetime presidential address on elections. The address will come as Trump has escalated calls for Republicans to pass restrictive federal rules ahead of the midterms that could disenfranchise millions of voters. The Senate Intelligence Committee is expected to vote next week on Clayton's nomination to be the nation's next Director of National Intelligence. I'm Eileen Alfandary for KPFA News.
President Trump is once again putting the 2020 election at the center of the national political debate. The president says he'll use a nationally televised address Thursday night to unveil newly declassified intelligence that he claims raises new questions about the election 6 years ago and has suggested the evidence implicates Georgia Democrats John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, who won Senate runoffs in early 2021. The White House says Acting Director of National Intelligence Bill Pulte has been directed to release additional intelligence records related to the 2020 election. Administration officials say the speech will focus on foreign interference and what they describe as vulnerabilities in voting machines. Trump spoke with the press at the White House Tuesday.
Around the nation are anticipating your big announcement on Thursday night regarding election machines and integrity. Can you give us sort of a sneak peek about what to expect and tell the audience?
Well, I'd rather save it. It will concern that subject, and we'll have a couple of other things to say also. But I'd rather save it, but it's really big news. It's really, really big news. And our country has to shape up. But that's what we're going to be talking about Thursday is... It doesn't get bigger. because without free and fair elections, you don't have a country. We'll be discussing other things too, but it's going to be a very big announcement. Yeah.
At the center of his complaint are the results of the Georgia Senate race that favored Democrats John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, whom the president alleges are invalid. Democrats are pushing back forcefully. Georgia Senator John Ossoff dismissed Trump's allegations, saying they're part of a long-running effort to relitigate an election that has already been extensively reviewed.
Again, just consider for a moment that we understand the president may be threatening to declare sitting United States senators illegitimate. If that is the course of action he pursues, he is calling Georgia voters illegitimate. From the very moment Georgia voters rejected him in 2020, he's been on the warpath because he was humiliated by the rebuke that Georgians dealt him. And he was humiliated and furious in particular as a committed lifelong racist that it was black voters in Georgia who were instrumental in his defeat.
Currently, Ossoff is running for re-election against Republican challenger Mike Collins and holds a double-digit lead in latest polling. Trump's claims are expected to face immediate backlash. Since the 2020 election, state and federal officials, independent audits, and dozens of court rulings have found no evidence that widespread fraud or voting machine manipulation changed the outcome. Election officials have also said they have found no evidence that foreign cyber intrusions altered vote counts. Here is Senator Ossoff again speaking on MS Now.
I think that he is trying to create some pretext for an abuse of federal power, trying to create cover for state and local allies to get up to no good in those jurisdictions and try to lay the groundwork for some kind of potential challenge to the results. That's what I think his goal is. But this, I think they're divided within the White House and the administration on this. And here's what I would say. If you're working in the Trump administration right now, if you're, say, CIA Director John Ratcliffe, and you see what's about to happen, that they're going to selectively declassify some nonsense to try to lay the foundation for some kind of mischief. This is the last chance to jump ship and speak out, because you will be forever tainted by your association with these kinds of shenanigans.
Meanwhile, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson is pulling out the stops, trying to discredit Democrats by yet again comparing them to foreign 20th century Soviet villains from the Cold War era.
Congress put In God We Trust above the rostrum because they wanted to remind everybody who would ever serve in this body in Congress that there is a huge distinction between us and the Soviets' philosophy. Communism, Marxism, socialism, all this begins with the premise that there is no God. It's a totally different philosophy. In our declaration that we just celebrated 250 years on July 4th, the nation's creed, as you hear me talk about all the time, the second paragraph, we hold these truths to be self-evident and all men are created equal. Our rights come from our Creator God. They do not come from the government.
If Trump tries to illegitimize sitting elected officials, he will certainly face backlash. And ultimately, the president does not have the constitutional power to do so. Article 1, Section 5 of the Constitution gives that power to the Senate itself, and expulsion from the Senate would require a two-thirds vote. The Georgia fraud claims have already had their day in court. 64 cases were filed challenging the 2020 results, and none could produce evidence that fraud had taken place. Here is Senator Raphael Warnock addressing his constituents on social media.
Long debunked conspiracy theories about the 2020 election yet again. He is attacking our democracy, and Georgia is ground zero. Can you believe it? 2020 was 6 years ago, and Trump is president right now. So why is he still talking about this egregious lie? The real reason goes well beyond his fragile ego. It's all part of his goal to hold on to power at any cost. Let me break it down for you. Donald Trump lost Georgia in 2020. That's not my opinion. It's a fact. The votes were counted, recounted, audited, and litigated. He lost, he lost, he lost. But this really isn't about 2020. It's about 2026. He is trying to sow doubt on the integrity of our elections in Georgia so that he can create the pretext to interfere in 2026. It's happening right now. before our very eyes. As we speak, the president is trying to change the rules to tilt the playing field in his favor.
Senator Warnock is not on the ballot this year. His term is up in 2028. Joining us now to discuss Trump's stab at discrediting U.S. elections ahead of the midterms is executive editor of The Nation, John Nichols.
President Trump says he's going to go on TV and deliver an upcoming speech about election integrity and that he's got newly declassified intelligence that will expose all the problems he's been complaining about with the 2020 election. What do you think this is about? Should we be worried?
Well, this has been a long-term passion of President Trump, and it's a very interesting thing because even before he got involved in many of the controversies that have come in recent years, he always wanted to present the image of himself not just as a winner of elections, but as an overwhelming winner, a big winner, a landslide winner. He's referred often to his 2016 election win as a landslide, even though he got 3 million fewer votes than Hillary Clinton. And so this is something that really eats at him. It's something he thinks about a lot. And he has, for a very long time, again, going back throughout his presidency, claimed that the reason he hasn't won elections, or at least hasn't won by as much as he thinks he should, is not because of his own unpopularity or his own challenges, but rather because of election fraud, election wrongdoing, of some kind of messing with the process by somebody that doesn't like him. And so this he has never let go of, and it appears he's going to take it into a new platform, which is a address to the nation in which he suggests that he is, you know, ready to fight, you know, on these issues, to do more. What that is, we don't know. It's going to be a very significant speech in that regard because a couple things. Number one, most people do not believe that he's going to have any incredible new revelations. You never know, but we'll see. That, in fact, this is probably going to be an amplification of things that he said before. But he's doing it in a national television broadcast, which historically Americans look at as a very significant moment, right? You know, something the president stops, you know, the kind of broader discourse and says, hey, listen to me, I have to talk to you about something very, very important. And as a result, he's going to claim that time to amplify things, again, that I think he's been saying for a long time. The responsibility of the networks, as well as media in general, becomes very great here because there is a real need to fact check this, to get to the bottom of it. Is what he's saying new, or is it just a repeat of things we've heard before? And what is he proposing? You know, what is he suggesting has to be done? And so this is, you know, talk about Trump, but it's also a great challenge for our media, which frankly, I think most media analysts would tell you over time has not done a particularly good job of holding the president to account and of kind of keeping on top of in real time of the claims that he makes. So challenging moment. And you ask, is it something you should be concerned about? Yeah, I think it is something people should be concerned about because we are really in the midst right now of a very intense midterm election season. And it's vital that, you know, that we have a fact-based and reality-based election season, not one that's muddied by wild charges and claims that are not grounded in reality.
It seems that he is, so he's especially highlighting Senators John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock and saying that they're frauds and they didn't really win, despite Ossoff having a 13-point lead over his opponent currently right now and being very popular. How are voters supposed to contend with this kind of gaslighting?
Well, the president has hinted, or at least the people around the president, there's been these hints that there might be some sort of direct attack on Ossoff and Warnock, both of whom won by relatively decent margins when they were elected, and Warnock's been reelected since then, and Ossoff looks to be in very good position for a reelection. And there's been such blowback on that and so much criticism of the suggestion that it'll be important to see whether Trump actually says it. I wonder whether he will, or whether even he will choose to back off from making such a claim. If he does, I frankly think that it's going to be harmful to the Republican candidate against Ossoff down in Georgia, because at the end of the day, all the media will go to Ossoff's Republican opponent and, you know, press him on this issue. And frankly, Ossoff's quite popular in Georgia. He's built a good reputation, a good base there. And I think that, in a sense, a Republican candidate having to defend the president's charges or claims, or having to go against him and say, well, I'm not sure I believe that, whatever it is, that's not good for the Republican, I don't think. It's a troubling claim. It's an unsettling, effort to kind of create a false premise. But by the same token, again, I tend to think that, especially in the Georgia context, this doesn't necessarily help the Republicans to have the president kind of going this far to extremes.
And it's really about voter turnout. So
yeah.
Trump he's tying the election integrity agenda to his voter ID requirements and proof of citizenship rules, and he won't stop talking about the SAVE Act. Do you think voter turnout is going to be affected by this?
That's a very good question. Clearly, the president is very, very concerned about the circumstance he's in politically. While he would never say this publicly, I think he knows that his approval ratings are terrible, and that on many of the issues where he was popular, or at least where he had a higher level of approval, that's declined significantly. I think he also knows that Republicans are very vulnerable in the race for control of the House of Representatives, and reasonably vulnerable in the race for control of the U.S. Senate. I think he is unsettled by the circumstance, and I think that he knows full well that a very high turnout is something that doesn't usually bode well for him. Remember that in 2020, when Joe Biden beat Donald Trump, the turnout that year was astronomical. And, you know, Biden ran up an incredibly high popular vote. That was very beneficial to a lot of Democrats down ballot. And so I think he does have concerns in this area. But here's the twist of it. Since Trump became president in 2017, we've had a number of elections, and the elections have always tended to have higher turnout than what came before. We are in a high turnout moment in America. Because I think things are so intense, and because I think there is so much deep disagreement. 2018, you did have a notable boost in turnout. 2020, a striking boost in turnout. It was a little down 2022, a little down in 2024. Now that Trump is back in office, though, and the Republicans are trying to defend this agenda, which, again, as I said, in the polls is very unpopular, I think turnout's going to be high. It may be in some places difficult to vote. Who knows what barriers may come and all the challenges. But I always go back to something that the Reverend Jesse Jackson said and often said, which is that when you're in a very difficult position, yeah, there are going to be people who don't want you to vote. And he goes back, remembering to Jackson in his life, went back remembering the civil rights era and even before that. So he knows about barriers to voting. But he said the critical thing is to mobilize people to turn out, to mobilize people to believe that even if it's difficult, they can and should vote. And so I think here the energy is leaning toward a high turnout. And if progressive forces recognize the importance of, getting people to the polls, mobilizing people, using whatever legal strength they have, as well as whatever grassroots on the ground strength they've got, that the likelihood is that this will be a boosted turnout election. And if it is, history tells us that will probably benefit the Democrats.
That was the voice of executive editor of The Nation magazine, John Nichols. President Trump's dismissal of the remaining members of the Federal Election Assistance Commission is raising new questions about the federal government's role in administering elections ahead of the 2026 midterms. While Minnesota election officials say they're prepared to run secure elections, they warn the loss of federal guidance and support could make it harder and more expensive to replace aging voting equipment. Mike Moen has more.
Questions loom large about the federal government's role ahead of the midterm elections. After President Donald Trump ousted the remaining members of a key agency, Minnesota officials are preparing cautiously. Members of the Independent Election Assistance Commission were dismissed. The agency distributes aid to local offices for operational needs while assisting with voting system certifications. Cass County Election Administrator Pamela Smith is confident her team is ready, but says inconsistent federal support makes things harder.
You have a cell phone, and a year it probably needs to be updated. And that's just the same thing with election equipment.
The Bipartisan Policy Center says a significant portion of the nation's voting devices are approaching the end of their recommended lifespan. The White House says the president has the right to remove individuals who may not be totally aligned with the task of securing elections. But Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon suggests the move aligns with other actions by the president to undermine voting. Smith echoes research findings that the Constitution places states in charge of elections. Still, she'd like to see a mindset at the federal level that promotes a guiding and supportive voice for local election offices.
We kind of feel like orphan children, you know, without a federal election commission. It just doesn't seem right. I don't know how this can keep going.
As for unpredictability with federal aid, Smith says when states can't help to fill these funding gaps, local jurisdictions feel pressure to turn to taxpayers. Meanwhile, despite his frustrations with the president's decision, Secretary Simon says the state will, quote, deliver an election that is fair, accurate, honest, and secure. This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection.
In Maine, protesters gathered outside Senator Susan Collins' Biddeford office on Monday and also outside of the ICE detention center near that small New England community after ICE agents fatally shot a 26-year-old Colombian man during an immigration enforcement operation nearby. Demonstrators demanded answers about the shooting and called on Collins to oppose the Trump administration's expanding immigration crackdown. The protest comes as Collins seeks re-election in one of the nation's most closely watched Senate races. Lauren Schmidt has more on the story.
For the second time in less than a week, a federal immigration officer has fatally shot a motorist, this time in Maine. In both recent cases, officials say ICE agents were attempting to locate someone else when the deadly encounters occurred. And in neither incident were agents wearing body cameras, despite Congress providing $20 million for the accountability measures. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries blamed the Trump administration.
Donald Trump promised that ICE enforcement in this country would target the worst of the worst. But instead, billions of taxpayer dollars are being used by ICE to brutalize and kill American citizens and violently target law-abiding immigrant families and communities, including in Maine earlier today.
The man who was killed in Biddeford, Maine this morning is being identified as a 26-year-old native of Colombia who was authorized to work in the United States. That's according to the Maine chapter of the Immigrant Rights Coalition, who say he even had a Social Security number. After the shooting, the man's family contacted the coalition through its hotline. The family, however, has said it is not yet ready to identify him or speak publicly about the shooting. But Mary Hayes, a neighbor of the family who joined protesters at a rally, described him as a devoted family man.
They were neighbors. He lived in this brick building right here with his wife and his daughter. I watched a wife fall to her knees looking at her husband's dead body on the ground. I watched a little girl crying with a little pink backpack on. because she's never going to see her father again. And I heard the anguish of a mother that just lost everything in her life.
The U.S. Department of Homeland Security said in a post to X that ICE was surveilling an address for a person with a final order of removal. When ICE tried to stop a vehicle driven by someone coming from that address, quote, the vehicle attempted to flee the scene and, fearing for public safety, an officer discharged his weapon, close quote. Independent Maine Senator Angus King said Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen told him agents were in Biddeford to serve an arrest warrant, but that the warrant was not actually for the man who was fatally shot. Mullen promised King there would be an investigation into the shooting.
My statement to Secretary Mullen, I said, I'm going to say that you have committed to me that this investigation will be full, fair, and transparent. Can I say that? He said, yes, absolutely.
However, that promise has yet to reach Houston, Texas, where the family of Lorenzo Salgado Araujo say they have received no answers after the 52-year-old husband and father was shot and killed by ICE agents on his way to work 6 days ago. Salgado Araujo had lived in the United States for more than half his life and was in the process of obtaining legal status. Harris County District Attorney Sean Tare said federal authorities are not cooperating with the county's investigation.
The federal government has not invited us in. The federal government is not collaborating to this point with us in this investigation. I've been in this office for almost 20 years. I can tell you that with every state or local officer involved in a shooting, the DA's office knows that officer's identity within 12 hours at the outset. In this case, we're 6 days and we don't know.
The lack of cooperation is something Minnesota prosecutors know well, as state investigators say the FBI obstructed their investigation into the fatal ICE shootings of Renee Good and Alex Preddy. But today, 6 months after the shootings, they announced they have obtained key evidence and are moving forward with their investigation.
We knew, for instance, from media that the federal agents were wearing body cams during the interaction with Alex Preddy. But we didn't know whether that was true or not. So we now have all of that information. I wouldn't say that there's a... I'm told we have the body cam evidence.
While Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty says her office has now obtained hard drives containing witness statements, body cam footage, and other evidence that was previously withheld, today's fatal ICE shooting in Maine once again raises questions about transparency. As officials confirmed, the ICE agents involved were not wearing body cameras. The same was true in last week's fatal shooting of Lorenzo Salgado Araujo. Earlier this year, then Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem had pledged to rapidly acquire and deploy body cameras for ICE officers following the fatal shootings of two American citizens. But according to the independent senator from Maine, Angus King, the Department of Homeland Security has yet to fulfill that promise.
Body cameras, we've been told that body cameras would be widely distributed. The secretary told me that they're on order, that they have been distributed widely across the country, but not everywhere, and apparently not in Biddeford, Maine. But I am concerned that they should have been having body cameras 2 years ago when all this started. It shouldn't be a case of, oh, well, maybe we should do body cameras. They didn't have them. They're coming, he said, in something like 45 days, but that doesn't help us in this case.
Security camera footage being circulated online shows the aftermath of the shooting, including a white car circling an intersection, a law enforcement SUV stopping the car, and agents opening a door to pull out a limp body. One eyewitness described the shooting. He spoke to the Associated Press and said he heard gunshots and went to a third-floor window overlooking the scene.
I clearly heard the victim say, "I tried to stop." Clearly heard him say that. The ICE agent that shot him walked right in front of me. And I, of course, I had I was emotional, and I just let him have it. And he looked at me, and he said he tried to run me over or something to that effect. I don't remember his exact words. There was another ICE agent with him that was trying to comfort him, and they walked away.
As a result, Mainers took to the street almost immediately. Protesters gathered outside the Biddeford office of Republican Senator Susan Collins. The protest condemned both ICE's enforcement actions and Senator Collins' support for expanded immigration enforcement, as Collins voted in favor of legislation providing an unprecedented $70 billion increase in funding for ICE, the largest funding increase in the agency's history. Speaking from the protest, Shea Stewart Boulay, director of Community Change, Inc., said the community will not tolerate what she described as escalating ICE violence.
We need to continue being out in these streets. Friends, we have seen what has happened in Minnesota. We have seen what happened in Chicago. And in many of our minds, we probably thought as Mainers, that would never happen here. And if it did, it'd probably be in the big city like Portland. But it didn't. It happened here, in Biddeford, in our community.
Dozens of demonstrators protested ICE and President Donald Trump's immigration crackdown with a walking vigil in Biddeford this Monday evening. With today's fatal incident in Maine, there have now been 11 ICE-related shootings since Donald Trump's immigration crackdown began. In nearly half of those cases, the person killed was behind the wheel of a vehicle. For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
Todd Creshan was at the protests this week in Maine. He's the former co-chair of the Maine Democratic Socialists of America and a longtime activist. He chatted with me over the phone about how this recent shooting is affecting Mainers.
Maine is not a state that we usually associate with, you know, like large-scale immigration protests like we're seeing in Minneapolis or Los Angeles. What are you seeing from the protesters on the ground in Maine who've mobilized so quickly to this shooting?
Maine is not typically thought of as a state with a lot of immigrants in it, but there are very heavy concentrations of Somali and Congolese and Angolan and Central American and South American immigrants in the major towns and cities. Portland, Lewiston, Biddeford, where Johann Sebastian Guerrero was just murdered by ICE yesterday. It's a small mill town, 10 miles south of Portland. Growing immigrant communities concentrated in a few places. And ICE declared war, and Trump declared war specifically against the Somali community here in Maine, the long history of Somali resettlement in Lewiston and then in Portland here in Maine. And with his open declaration of war against the Somali community, they declared a surge into Maine in January of this year. And they literally called it the catch of the day, demeaning immigrants as fish that they were going to go hunt. And they came here with hundreds of federal agents. Their stated purpose was to detain and abduct and deport 1,400 people. Because of the mass scale of the opposition, people following them in their cars, protesting at the workplaces, hardening through Fourth Amendment, trainings, workplaces, schools, hospitals, mass protests, pots and pans protests outside the hotels where they were staying. After only 10 days, ICE was forced to retreat after only detaining 200 people, which is 200 people too many, but far less of the 1,400 people they wanted.
And you were involved in this protest outside the ICE detention center, and you and some of the other candidates and officials who gathered there are criticizing ICE's presence in Maine. What are the specific demands that you are bringing to federal and state officials after the shooting?
The specific demands are that all ICE agents should stand down and leave the state, that the murderers, and there was more than one ICE agent who shot into his car to murder 26-year-old young father Johann Sebastian Guerrero, murder him literally outside his home on the street where he lives. We are demanding that the Attorney General Fry of Maine press charges against the ICE agents responsible for this murder. but we want ICE out of our state and we want them out now.
Some people might say that the people organizing and protesting right now are rushing to judgment before the investigation is complete. How do you respond to that?
We knew because of what was happening in Minneapolis after they murdered two American citizens that their surge in Maine in January, it was just a matter of time before they murdered somebody in Maine. We managed to kick them out of the state before they accomplished that, but we knew that they would come back through the back door, and that's what they've done. They have been harassing and abducting people below the radar for the last 3 months. We've been sounding the alarm, but we knew that it was just a matter of time before these yahoos, gun-crazy mall cops were going to shoot somebody in the face, and that's exactly what they've done. So all the video, all the evidence, all of the testimony points clearly to the fact that these yahoos have done exactly what they've done in Minneapolis and exactly what they've done in Texas, which is they shoot first and ask questions later. And unfortunately, a family has paid the ultimate price.
Yeah, and looking at some of the social media posts from Mainers over the